Okay, here we go again. I think we kind of proved this morning that we, a group of 160 people, can in fact discuss these things and make some progress. Let's keep in mind that we're just designing the framework for a possible alternative along these lines. We've got a couple of people still on the list, and then we'll come back to where we were.
John, Darren, Sally, David.
My idea about the ballots, simplify.
Can you speak into the mic, John? We can't hear you.
My idea, simplify the choices as much as possible. When we are going to have the excellent idea of randomization, and we are going to have seven different parties, seven different contestants, with many, many chances that voters are not going to follow exactly the procedures, and we are going to have lots of wasted votes and lots of void voices, because many people are not going to take the time to go through all the lists and make the proper sign. And sure, people who are politically fairly educated, they are going to take time. But many people are not going to do, and we are going to have at least 10-15% of wasted or void votes, unless we try to simplify somehow this ballot. The number of the party or the number of the contestant or the number what you have to punch in or sign in to have a correct choice. It's not so simple, this ballot system.
Darren.
Thanks. Just before we broke for lunch, a suggestion was made that the parties be allowed to rank their candidates on the STV ballot. And I would just like to suggest that's not a good idea. I think one of the things that STV is designed to achieve is responsiveness of the candidates to the community. And when you give the party the initiative of ranking the candidates on the ballot, you know, it makes the candidates, it encourages them to be more loyal to the party vice their constituents. So I would suggest a random organization of the candidates on the ballot might be better. Thanks.
You want to, Michelle, have a quick response, since he was kind of going at right at you, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was. And thanks, Darren. And I don't think I came across correctly or as I wanted to with that question. I wanted the feedback on the concern of making it, accommodating those voters who really, really don't understand. And I wanted the argument back, because that's the part I don't get on the whole STV on the ballot. So I thank David and Darren and a couple others that were talking to me on that issue outside. Okay, thanks.
And then we have Sally and David saved over before the break, and then we have a list of four more people, but you might want to make an introduction or something else first, Ken, but we have Sally and David.
What I'm reading the STV last night, I know that there is the problem or criticism in the ballot positioning in the STV, and I know I have to address about what Michelle is talking about people who are not very familiar on voting procedures, that they need to be educated. And I found out that there is discrepancies also in positioning of the candidates and the ballot, and also that there is a confusion of names when it comes to people names, like for example, in my community there are so many Koreans and they are all Kim, and then there are all Chong in Chinese. Those are very confusing when we go to the poll, because which is Kim and which is Paul. So we have to, I request that or suggest that there should be pictures included in the ballot, so we can distinguish which Kim it is or which Chong it is, because those are very confusing names that they are popular names, but there are so many.
Thanks,
so
Alex.
Those are my suggestions.
and then David from leftover, and then we got a whole bunch of people since coffee.
Thanks. In our group yesterday, we talked about basically the choices were the people favored were either totally random, just a list of candidates randomized, or a list of candidates within parties where the parties were randomized and the list of parties were randomized and the candidates within the party were randomized. The preference in our group was for the latter, as opposed to total chaos where everything was all over the place. And I'm comfortable with that. But I just wanted to speak to the suggestion that Michelle had. I think it's we have to be very careful about providing shortcuts on the ballot because they do have the potential to change the whole flavor of the system. And I also don't believe they're necessary. There's some concerns about the ballots becoming very large. And I think the experience in other jurisdictions would surprise many people that the ballots, the last election in Ireland, and they got to DMs of five, the largest ballot had 17 candidates. They have had 21, 22 for a DM of five, but it's nowhere near some of the numbers that people have been speculating about. And I think it's it's useful to sort of think about that. You know, it's not going to be that complicated. And Shoni's just handed me a bunch of research on this, so she can want to speak to that.
Now, we've got eight people on the list, Dr. Carty.
Okay, I just would I want to draw people's attention to something that the Deputy Chief Electoral Officer pointed out to me during the break, is that one of the issues around randomization may well be a difficulty in some of the parts of this electoral districts where there are large numbers of people don't have strong English capacities. The current practice is, in fact, that the returning officers now print up mock ballots in Chinese or other languages and post them in the ballot places so people can see the order of the candidates. So they have a greater facility of reading in Chinese or some other language, they can say, oh yeah, there's where my candidate is, and then they go in and actually get the ballot, which is only provided in English. They can do it. You couldn't do that if you were randomizing, because they wouldn't know which one they had. That's an administrative kind of issue, and whether it's one for us to be concerned or not, or we can just say, well, they'll figure it out if they're smart people or not. But so randomization may raise kind of issues in a multicultural society, which we haven't actually worked through, but that's just a kind of back burner issue. So we are still on the issue of a candidate ordering, and basically the fundamental choice seems to be whether we want to organize them by party or not by party. And then within that, there is the random issue. But, okay, where are we on the list, Jack?
Campbell. It's just a question of terminology. I don't know whether people are confused. There's, when you talk about random, when I was talking about random, I meant simply random order on the ballots, and that would be the same for all one electoral district's ballots, okay? If you want to go into the fancy stuff, then you should call that Robson rotation, which is the problem you would have if ballots changed in any given electoral district. So there's, in other words, the ballots format that you were given, one of the things that you were given on yesterday, the one on the Excel sheet, was alphabetical or random, but it would be the same random order for every ballot in that electoral district. Is that what you meant?
Okay, are there other... Okay, let's go back to the list.
Edith.
I think to get to Michelle's thing, is there not also the option that you have a party vote? And so therefore that would give you the option if you just wanted to vote the party line, you could vote for the party and your votes get distributed. The other thing is I think the translation problem, if you only have three different types of ballots, if you just had, you know, ballot one, this is what it's like, and if you've got ballot two, I think that the language difficulty is not such that people couldn't tell that they're voting on ballot one and that this is the order of the candidates. So.
Go ahead.
Wilf, Jim, Nick.
Thank you. I think we need to keep in mind that one of the reasons we're looking at this system is to lessen is that it might lessen party control. Another reason is that we want every vote to count. So if every vote is going to count, then all the candidates must have fair opportunity to get a vote. And unless we randomize the candidates list, and I think even the party list, I don't see that happening. Thank you.
Thanks, Will. Jim, I think.
Jim, over there.
I'll pass. I was covered. Thanks.
Nick.
Yes, this is to address Darren and David's concern about the party list. I just felt that to create the opportunity for the voters to have greater control by ranking their own or using the party would increase voter participation, and they could exercise their control or their ease as they see fit.
Thanks, Nick.
Gene.
I just want to say I favor a randomization of the candidates within party. The alternate rotation, I think, makes a lot of sense. Another thing I want to point out is, don't worry, folks, the political parties will have handouts to give to their supporters on who to vote. So they all walk in with cheat sheets or lists, so people will figure a way out. Thank you.
Art.
Yeah, I think Gene just about covered what I was going to say, but you know, I'm starting to get a little twitchy about all these people saying, well, we have to make it simple. If people want to vote, they'll figure it out or find out and get some help if they need it. And you know, it's surprising what people can do. If you tell somebody he's stupid, he's going to start believing it after a while.
I know. Do you think, Mr. Carty, we're getting consensus on this? Okay. I have Jill, Anna, Douglas, and Craig. Jill.
I'm in agreement with people who are against party grouping on the ballot. I think the Robson rotation makes a lot of sense. It's not on your issues of ballot format, but I'm also against providing an above-the-line option for STV. I think it would change it entirely. I have concerns about the suggestions regarding photos on ballots. I think that kind of plays to style over substance in decision-making. And however, despite my wanting it random on the ballot, I'm not against parties providing in their campaign literature their own take on what they would prefer people to vote.
Thanks, Jill.
We have four more speakers, Ken. Should we perhaps try that and see
if yeah, let's do these four and then
see where we are.
We'll see where we are, exactly.
Anna.
Well, I would agree with everything Jill just said. I'm against above-the-line voting. I'm in favor of the Robson rotation. But I also wanted to ask a question about the concern expressed by John on spoiled ballots. And I remember reading about it somewhere, but what is the percentage of spoiled ballots in our current system, and what is it in an STV system somewhere else? Is there a big difference?
No, there's not significant differences. I think that the evidence suggests that if you change the electoral system, the spoiled ballot rates go up the first time, but usually by a trivial amount. I mean, there's both public education and the parties work so hard to kind of say to the voters, okay, it's a new thing we're doing here, this is what you do, that it's not, I don't think it's a significant issue.
Douglas.
I'd like to ask a question of the Deputy Electoral Returning Officer over here in the gallery behind us, just so we have a better understanding of what that ballot may look like. We have 41 registered parties, as far as I know, in the province of BC. That is correct. In the last election, what was the maximum number of parties that were represented on a single ballot? Are we talking like five parties in any particular region, any particular electoral district? What was the maximum number of parties that appeared on the ballot? I wonder if she can answer that.
I think basically you're behind the times, Douglas. We now have 43 registered parties in British Columbia. You know, there isn't a high barrier to be a registered political party in BC. I don't think more than, what, 6 or 7 in any given district, Linda, something like that. That was the outside. And what typically happens is the big parties run in as many districts as possible. The biggest ones are almost in them all, and the small parties tend to run in a few.
So, in effect, when you end up with a district magnitude of, let's say, 4 or 5, you may end up seeing a maximum of 8, maybe 9 parties on a ballot under the STV system. We're just sort of rounding.
Yeah. And remember that no party's probably run as many candidates as there are.
Yeah. So in effect, that doesn't really make the ballot too complex. It's not like we have 15 parties, each one of them running 3 to 5 candidates. We're only looking at about 8, 9 parties, maybe 3 to 5 candidates in any one of them. A reasonable-sized ballot?
That sounds to me like a real maximum. I'd be very surprised if we got anywhere near that. But
okay, we've got 2 more. Anne, way back there.
Yes, I just wanted to... Yesterday I shared my experience of voting in a municipal election for the first time. It was a ballot I'd never seen before. There was many, many names on it. And sort of following along in Jean and other people's comments, I was so educated by the time I walked into the voting station. There had been full-page ads on what the ballot looked like. Most of the parties had sent pamphlets or everything, so I knew exactly how I was going to vote. I was really well educated even before I walked in there, so I knew what to do with the ballot, and it was extremely educated for me. You know, us Albertans, we and I was able to do it. So, you know, I really don't want to us to dummy down the voter. If I learned it, I think anybody can.
So, in other words, if you come from a one-party state like Alberta, you can actually learn what competition's about. Okay, thanks, Anne.
Well, Craig is the last person on the list that we thought we'd try and use before we take a vote. I mean, take a check on where things are.
Thanks. We had actually in our group yesterday, we had a great discussion. We were all saying, yeah, we want to randomize the list and have the name and then the party affiliation beside the name or something like that. But have a list. I think we all pretty much thought that was the best way to go. And then Alan suggests that we actually look at the ballots and what they look like and which are understandable. And if you look at what we suggested, it's kind of hard to see what is going on in the ballot. And then we turned the page and saw the Tasmanian ballot. And right at a glance, you could see very clearly people who you wouldn't vote for at all from parties which you wouldn't want representing you, and others which your choice set were in. So it helps you, a ballot like that would help you organize your thinking and allow you to make your preferential choices more carefully. That being said, you don't want those lists of names to be ordered by alphabetical order. The random ordering would be essential, and no above the line voting either. But that kind of vote or that organization visually helps would help in the voting process.
Okay, we've had actually a number of speakers on both sides of this kind of issue. The kind of basic issue as to whether it would be a good idea for ballots to group candidates by party or not. There are subsequent questions of randomization and so on, but there is a kind of fundamental division about whether you decide to group them by candidates visually or not. If not, you'd still probably have the party names as identifiers. So why don't we just kind of see where we're at on that, perhaps. How many would think that grouping by parties would be the best way to organize the ballot? How many think that not grouping by parties? Well, it's split, but I think the former had it by kind of a 2-to-1 ratio, something like that. So now questions of randomization within lists. We heard a lot of people speaking in favor of that. Are there people who would be opposed to that, would want to make a case? Show of hands, just on a kind of, where are we on randomization? How many people think that would be desirable? The random principle wins again. Am I surprised? Well, David?
Campbell suggested that it was, you know, randomization and disruption rotation are two different things. And certainly when we were talking about randomization, I was under the impression that what we were talking about, yesterday at least, was that each ballot will be different, and not that it would be, they will be randomized, but that every ballot within the constituency would be the same. And I'm just as a point of clarification.
Well, I think where we're at is that in principle we want some kind of randomization, that the kind of the details of that, we may want to come back.
Well, but the point being that we were looking for, I believe I was looking for a situation or a system where the ballots that I got and the next person in line got were different.
Is that what people think about by randomization? Okay, this is what the students call Robson notation, right?
Yeah.
So that everybody has a chance of being in a different place on the ballot. Yes, Don?
I question how you can possibly group them by party and still use randomization. They can be random within the party, but then that still gives you sort of the possibility of voting party line as opposed to the implicit idea of what STV is.
Well, you can do that in any way, because even when they're not grouped by party, they have the party's labels on them, so voters who want to go and look for them can do that. And you would also kind of randomize the order of the parties on the ballot as well, so that one party always wouldn't get the first column or the second column or whatever, I think. Okay. Can we talk a little bit about the completion rules? Because this is an interesting question. And there are kind of three basic kinds of variations. One is that you have to kind of list a preference for every name on the ballot. Another one is that you have to, the second kind of dominant pattern is that if there are five candidates to be nominated, to be elected, you have to indicate five preferences. And the third one is you can just have as many preferences as you want, and you can stop when you've kind of run out of your preferences. Are there differing views on that? Is this an issue that people are concerned about? John?
I think there should be two more than the seats, whether it's five or less. Reason being, it would accomplish two things. First thing that would accomplish would be the seat vacancy provision. You wouldn't have to have another by-election if there's two more.
We have Tom, Harley, Don, and Ann, and Shoney.
Who was first, Tom?
Tom. Tom hasn't spoken yet today either. So.
Yeah, I haven't spoken in a while. I thought I'd add my two cents. My opinion on this is I would not want to have to rank more than one, because if you're ranking a candidate, technically you can be voting for that candidate. And if there's only one or two candidates on a ballot that I really want to vote for, I don't want to have to vote for somebody I really don't want. And, I mean, I'd realize that if I only rank one or two candidates, that my ballot might get tossed out after a while, but... I mean, I'd like that option.
Hardy?
Yeah, Tom, very well said. That's exactly what I think. As the voter choice guy here, I say you give the voters the maximum amount of choice they want, and if their choice is not to vote for certain candidates, then that's the best choice that they should have. I also think that it adds a bit to the simplicity value. Not one of my big ones, but I will say that it makes it simpler for the voters to vote. You know, if they know two candidates that they feel comfortable with, then that's their level of voting, that's the way they can. I go back to what Don asked about the ranking of candidates by party, and I think that also addresses some of the simplicity issue of what Craig was saying. It's very visual and divided up. It makes the ballot simpler and easier to work. I would be very, very against forming a system where we had to vote for all the candidates. That's just not practical. And I know there are some concerns about the issue of having enough transfers within a multi-member district if you only vote one or two candidates, but I think the research shows that that doesn't play a major effect.
Don?
Harley just covered what I was going to say, because when in our group yesterday we came up with this, there was this comment about perverse voting, or perverse results rather, and I think that alludes to what Harley was talking about.
Thanks, Don. Ann, I think, is next.
Yeah, covering some of the same ground, I had some input from people in my constituency area who very strongly said that they wouldn't be want to be forced to vote for more than one person. But then I do still have concerns if you do have a large percentage of the population who does that, what that does to the proportionality of the results.
Shoni?
This is providing some information that's answering maybe Doug's question a bit, and I think it's worth considering when you're saying how many do you want to rank. Looking back at the last couple of elections in Ireland in 3, 4, and 5 seat ridings, the number of parties running in a three-seat riding was average 5.4 with an average number of candidates of 8.2. So we're not talking ordering 40 candidates. In four-seat ridings, it was 6.66 parties with an average number of candidates of 11.4. And in five-seat ridings, it was an average number of parties of 6.66 with an average number of candidates of 13.9. So that just gives people some ideas of what it would mean to be ranking all or none or some.
I think Craig was next.
Yeah, just a question. On the effect of how many candidates parties put up for seats, depending on what we decide here? I'm wondering what the effect is of the decision with this on how many candidates the party puts up.
Sorry, I was checking the list. Can you repeat?
I'm wondering what effect this decision has on how many candidates each party puts up for election.
If you require the candidates to fill as many preferences as there are seats to be elected, the large parties are probably going to nominate more candidates, even though they're not going to get elected, because it's a way of controlling where the transfers maybe do or don't go. And it would also depend a little bit on the seat vacancy provision. If you want to be able to go back and recount, the parties are going to nominate more candidates so that they'll be available if one comes open.
Jill.
Thanks. Getting back to the perverse results concern, I agree that we shouldn't have to vote for everybody on the list or rank everybody on the list, but before I can kind of get a sense of whether to go the Ireland model where you could just vote one versus the Tasmania model where you have to vote the district magnitude, I need a little bit more information as to how it works in practice. If in a situation where you don't have to vote at least the district magnitude, what percentage of people actually only vote for one person or two people versus, you know, the full ranking? Is there any information on that? And how does that affect how STV actually works in practice?
Maybe a quick follow-up, because David has some statistics.
I looked at the number of votes that survive to the last count in Ireland, i.e. the number of votes that are considered in the last count and the quota for all the people who had previously been elected. And you get a drop off of about 5% from the first preference votes, and I don't believe it makes any significant difference. I didn't see any perverse results. So that's... Ken, you may have something to add there.
I think one way of thinking about it, Jill, is that it depends a little bit about the party that you're supporting. If in Ireland you're a supporter of Fianna Fáil, which is the big dominant party, and they're in it, if it's a five-seat district and they're running three candidates, their voters would certainly go 1, 2, 3. Then they might vote for another candidate, but they're likely to vote for as many. If you're a supporter of the Irish Labour Party and they're only running one candidate, you probably are going to vote for your party's candidate. You might vote another couple of preferences, but you're likely to be influenced a little bit in terms of kind of where you stand in terms of your preferences vis-a-vis what's being offered to you. But there doesn't seem to be any significant impact of the kind you're kind of worrying about.
Can we have four more speakers, then perhaps we can check where we're at? Jerry, Rob, Julie, Art.
My question is related to the perverse results.
Thanks. Rob?
I just wanted to echo Tom's concern that a voter shouldn't have to be forced to vote for parties that they fundamentally disagree with, that they should only be able to vote for one if they so choose. Thanks.
Julie, and then Art.
Things take time, and David, you were quoting from results in Ireland. Ireland's been using STV for a long time, and you were reflecting, talking with people in your constituency who've never used STV, and of course, I think are naturally reluctant. But I think given time and the realization over a few elections that people have a choice, they may exercise that choice in increasing numbers.
All right, you got the last wise word on this for the time being.
Oh, boy.
The pressure's on.
Yeah, you betcha. In this MMS submission on page 16, they've got a model of a ballot in which you can vote one, two, or three. I don't know if that would be of any help to anybody, but... it looks interesting.
Okay, so I just got a copy of that, the submission, so I haven't had a chance to look at it, but others may have seen it. Okay, well, we've had some views on this. Why don't we see where people are? How many people would be keen on, where should we start? Well, Douglas says, requiring people to vote at least as many preferences as there is district magnitude. How many think that we ought to have a system where people vote as many preferences as they choose? How many people think people should vote preferences for the entire ballot paper? There's no Australian Labor Party supporters in the room.
I think it's clear.
Okay, that was good. Okay, let's talk. We've got a bit of time, though, and we're making good progress about the seat vacancies, and they're... The kind of two big kind of options are to have a by-election and to have and to go back and kind of recount the ballots.
Tannis and Derek look really urgent.
Finally. I know you guys have all been just waiting to hear what I have to say. I think that by-elections are a really great tradition in our society, and one of the reasons is that they're a really good tool or meter for determining the attitudes of voters, you know, at whatever stage during an electoral cycle, and that if we were to just simply have an alternate at the beginning of the election, it could be a long period of time between, you know, the election and, you know, up to 3 years of needing somebody to be in a replacement. And as we all know, there can be huge swings in support for government policy and representatives themselves. And so I would really like to keep the option for a by-election as our seat vacancy provision.
Thanks, Ask. Derek?
Yeah, by-elections all the way. I just want to add my voice to that. That I think it's the only option.
Diana?
Yes, I'd like to see the ballot option exercised, because if we have alternates, if it's a while before they're called on, they may have moved on, they may have died, they may have completely left the district. They just may not be interested in following up, and there where we are we? Do we go further down the list? Do we end up getting to the bottom of the list at some point?
Don?
I'm all for by-elections. The only consideration I would ask is, if we're near the end of a term, why bother wasting the money? If it happens in the last 6 months, 9 months, whatever, is there a possibility of foregoing that by-election until the next general election?
Derek, just on that point, and then I've got three more speakers.
I think we have that provision that there's a, if you resign a certain month, certain period of time, the by-election doesn't have to be called. I believe that's already in existence. Perhaps that could be corrected.
There's Ken, there's Kerry, Douglas, and Wolf.
Okay, Kerry.
I believe that there's a by-election happening this November, and we have an election happening in May. So I agree with by-elections, but I think that we should perhaps look at anything in the last year before a new election should be released, and don't go to a by-election, wait for the real election, and that in an STV setting you'll probably have other MLAs if you have a problem in your constituency that you can go to in the meantime.
Douglas behind you there.
Kerry just said it.
Wolf?
Speaking in favor of by-election, to me the act as a barometer of what's going on in the province and in the politics. So I'm for it, with the exception of the last year.
Anne?
That was pretty much my comment. I think we use by-elections between elections to tell our governments or even the party how they're doing. If a party loses a seat, then that's a measure to they need to pull up their socks. But I like the idea of perhaps limiting it to maybe 3 or 4 months before an election.
Neil.
I find it hard to believe the North would go without a rep for 6 months.
Harley?
Just if you're going to go by election, what I assume we'd be using the alternative vote?
You could, or you could use a plurality vote, but essentially you'd be using one or the other because you're only going to be electing one member.
Just wondering if we should clarify that now.
Well, we wouldn't need to if we decided not to have by-elections. So let's decide what we need to decide for.
We have Tom and Jill on the list, but it was suggested to me, is there anybody have an opposing view? Because everybody's suggesting we should have by-elections. Is there an opposing view that someone would like to speak before we have an opposing view?
Shawnee and Lil.
Lil.
I'm glad.
Yes, I'm just thinking of a case in Alberta two or three elections ago. The day after the election, the very next day after the election, the MP passed away from cancer, and yet he got elected. In a case like that, I think the runner-up should get be brought in.
Okay, we have Shawnee and Lil. Shawnee?
My concern about the by-election is if it's... is because it's one seat being filled, then it's more likely one of the larger parties will win it. And so if it goes back and forth between, you know, if it's one large party or the other, it doesn't make much difference. But if you're a small party and you had maybe 4 members and you lost one of them, it makes quite a significant difference to have a by-election that's elected by AV or first past the post.
Lil?
Shoni's saying roughly the same thing I'm saying. If you elected by party an STV member and that STV member passed away or transferred out of the country or whatever, you would want to have someone else from your party put back in that same place. And in the recount elections in Tasmania, it says that it has to be a recount of that person's second preference, and I think that makes more sense.
New perspectives on this. We have, as Speaker Tom, something new on this one? Nope. Cross off. We have Derek, something new? Kind of? Well, we'll judge that, up or down, okay? Go ahead.
Just on Shoni's point, it's there are instances where little parties do win by-elections. I'm thinking of the ADQ in Quebec within the last election cycle, where they elected all 3 of their members in the House, I think after the leader, through by-elections, and they had no other members in the House. And it's often a reaction to the major parties, and that is often the best chance for independents or small parties to get elected, at least in our current system.
We have Daryl, and then we've got a few more, but you might want to, after Daryl, check, see where we are.
Okay, Daryl.
Just how many, historically, how many occurrences have there been where we've had to have by-elections? How big an issue is it?
I don't actually know the numerical issue, but, I mean, in principle, the system has to provide for it.
Recognized.
You could just say, we'll leave the seat vacant. We don't care. Yeah. But I guess that's an option, too. I didn't put that up. But... Maybe just, we could just kind of get a sense of where we're at. How many would be for the recounting of the ballots option? How many would be for a by-election option? Okay, people seem pretty keen on by-elections. Now, we have the question that Harley raised about whether we'd want to do that by an alternate vote, a preferential ballot, or by just a simple plurality. Views on that?
Can we also raise the question of whether we do something different in the first 6 months and the last 6 months?
Sure.
John has been pushing hard to speak.
Since you wanted to have some new ideas, why don't we save the money on the by-election and just the party is going to decide who is going to follow his dead member in the parliament?
What if it's an independent?
I know it's no, but this is the way it is. You want to save money.
Okay, there's Peter.
And time.
Peter, Harley, Wendy, Rick.
I was just going to add to what Gladys was saying, is that the person who got the second amount of votes would take that position, or the third, just in case the second wasn't available. If there was nobody else to take that seat, then possibly go to a by-election. Thank you.
Harley, Wendy, Rick.
Harley.
Just a quick response to that question about the seat belonging to the party. I have a totally different view. This is a candidate-based system, STV. I believe that that MLA position actually belongs to the voters.
Wendy?
Yes.
Well, Harley made my first point very well. I guess if we do a by-election, I think that we should use the alternative vote and not a plurality vote. I really prefer the preferential ballot. It gives people a chance to really express their preferences. So that's my vote for AV.
Thanks, Wendy. Rick?
Yeah, I was just hoping that before we had a show of hands that we actually nailed down a time, whether it's 3 months, 6 months, a year before we had a raise of hands on in favor or not of by-elections. It's hard if I don't have a set time. After 6 months, perhaps, that would dictate how I would vote for a by-election.
Ralph is next, if you...
Ralph?
What are the current rules?
The current rules, and I stand to be corrected, are that the government gets to decide when the by-election is, and I understand they have to call it within a year of it being vacant. Is that? Within 6 months. I think it's longer federally. So it can be vacant for as long as 6 months, and then the government has to call it. So they have some discretion over that. And is it true they don't call it in the last 6 months? No, because, of course, up till now, we've never known when the last 6 months were. Right? And you don't know when the first 6 months are. Now we may do under fixed voting rules, fixed elections. Fixed elections, he changes that because before we didn't know if it was the first or the last 6 months, or because there could be an election any day. So we're in a different kind of situation. We're going to have, the parties and the government's going to have to kind of learn how to kind of play the fixed election process. And sometimes, of course, by-elections have been called and they fall virtually within the general election period, because suddenly the general election is called after the by-election, and those cases are usually simply rolled into one. But I guess that's where we're at now.
So we've got
I guess I was going to say, I think it's probably, I don't know if it's, it's probably impractical, and there may well be legal difficulties of having different rules for by-elections depending on different times of the electoral cycle. And I'm not sure, but I think that somebody might well raise interesting court challenges about that, because the principle would be different, right?
So can we have five speakers and perhaps maybe check where we are?
Okay.
So we have John, Craig, Derek, Peter, Bill. All men.
Derek's off. John?
Yeah, I'm curious to know, what is the voter turnout between a general election and a by-election? because that would make a big difference.
By-election turnouts are very, I think, erratic. Sometimes they can be quite high if there's a kind of local interest or there's people annoyed at the government or whatever. But in times of real political quiescence, they may fall because the parties aren't campaigning and there isn't as much attention and voters aren't reminded, oh, you've got to go to the polls. So I think they are much more kind of problematic in some sense. You don't know. It depends a lot on the circumstance.
Craig, number two.
Just looking for a clarification on what kind of DM we're talking about. If it's a region that has, say, a DM of 7, are we talking a by-election for the entire region?
With one seat to be filled.
I mean, for one seat to be filled for the whole DM of 7?
Yeah.
Seems like a waste of money, doesn't it?
Well, this member belongs to all those voters. I mean, all those voters get to choose just one, or she's just one of their representatives.
Peter?
I was just going to add to Harley's comment here, whatever that he was saying, that to go back to the voters, basically everybody has voted, so you basically did use your second and third preference for whatever riding you're in, so I just wanted to add to that.
And then Bill.
I think there's two things that we should look at here, and one is perhaps recommending or putting into a recommendation a time when we wouldn't need to have a by-election, say 6 months before the next fixed election, but also putting in a time when the government would have to call a by-election, because in the current system they could basically gerrymander it from, well, not gerrymander it, but wiggle it around so that they could wait the 6 months till the election was going to occur within 6 months of the general election, so there'd be a year without having someone if they thought that was to their advantage. So we should put in a shorter limit, or recommend a shorter limit for when they have to call the by-election. Thank you.
Ken, do you want to try three more before we see where we are?
Sure.
Look at the names, then you can decide.
Oh,
I'm
no.
Only joking. Joking.
I think Rob is next.
Rob, Douglas, and Frankie.
Bill pretty much covered what I was going to say in that they should be, if we have fixed elections, we should have fixed times when they have to call the by-elections and shorten it up so they can't do exactly what Bill described.
It's certainly a kind of issue that could win to other considerations, I think, a strong statement of, you know, the imperative of filling empty seats within fixed times.
I know we're dealing with the values of whether we want to have a by-election or not. But just again, so we have clear facts, I'd like to direct another question back to our deputy returning officer or election officer. What is the cost of a by-election on average? Is it a major factor? Just so we have some ideas to what we're dealing with. Not that it should sway our decision.
Well,
Thank you.
Okay.
Frankie.
Well, I know that regardless of cost, if it was my riding, I would certainly want to get back and get somebody elected in there as soon as possible. And it could be a large DM, it could be a small DM. The other thing is that, you know, we do have fixed election dates, but who knows? We may have a coalition or a minority government, and maybe we won't have that fixed election date. We don't know when the next federal election is going to be. You know, while we have got dates set provincially, we don't know what's going to happen under a new electoral system.
And then Sam's the first speaker on this one, so we're... Sam?
Please forgive my ignorance, but is this within our mandate?
Well, seats into votes, and we have to say something about what happens when the seat is empty. So we're, you know, both general elections and by-elections are exactly our mandate. Okay, well, we did hear actually quite a lot and had a kind of, I thought, overwhelming sense that maybe by-elections are the route to go, and I was hoping we might have some sense of whether AV or plurality rule would be the way you would do that. Had one or two voices in favor of AV, are there, that is a preferential ballot, are there any voices in favor of a plurality ballot? Amanda, do you want to?
I was just making sure that that's first past the post.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I'm in favor of that one.
Okay. Well, maybe we could, if we were to have by-elections, how many thought a preferential ballot, which would be a majority ballot, would be the best? How many a first past the post? So there's a kind of grudging enthusiasm for a majority votes. Well, we've gone through, I think, most of these kinds of issues. What we're going to try and do is we'll go back and take the notes on the record of these meetings and kind of write them all up and kind of put it all together and see if all these kind of decisions we take have taken, provisional decisions, have kind of held together and how they look. We haven't talked much about transfer rules. We can get into that, but it seems to me that we're really getting into the esoteric trivia of these kinds of things, and I would suggest that until you actually decide that STV was the alternative road you wanted to go down, you don't want to worry too much about that stuff, because it really is about the rules for transferring surpluses and eliminated votes and so on. Doesn't speak to the principles. Derek?
Well, my group talked about the preference transfer rules yesterday, and we had a good time with it, and I thought it was pretty productive. If other people would like to, I'd be happy to talk about it now.
And I actually beg to differ with Ken. I think it's, for me, one of a big concern about STV is whether the recount would be you would be able to replicate it or not. So for me, in terms of even comparing it to another system and considering it, the preference transfer rules do matter.
Do you want to say something more about that then?
I would, I strongly think that it, I would like to be able to, if I had to recount for a riding and come up with the exactly same results, so I would prefer the transfer that's a, I don't know what the technical name is, but a percentage, a fraction of each preference transferred rather than just a random selection, a surplus.
Okay, so transfer rules that are essentially replicable. And I think that in most systems they're probably going that way, because most of this is going to be done by computer in the future. But that seems pretty clear, rather than just taking a random selection as the Irish used to do.
Derek?
I'd like to strongly echo exactly what Shoni just said and elaborate that I think any element of random counting really calls into question the legitimacy of the process.
Okay. Any other thoughts on this subject? Okay, well, Douglas.
Well, again, I'm going to go back to our deputy electoral officer who's sitting behind us. The preference transfer rules, and all the counting, is this going to cause much of a problem with our elections, BC? In terms of, you know, we have to look at dollars. Is it a big dollar cost to train people to go through the process of learning how to do the counts? It could be a, well, it's not a major factor. It's just purely for information.
Well, I think that at every election they have to hire new people and train them. I mean, election offices are in constant training mode. They work 5 days a week, 7 weeks, 5 months a year, whatever, you know. Because they always have to be prepared for a by-election or for the coming general election. And so they're always engaged in this training. And clearly, if you change the system, no matter what you change, they're going to have to invent new procedures and practices. But in some ways, they do that every time the boundaries change, these kinds of things. So that's a regular part of the busy life of election officers.
Michelle has a question.
We didn't really, to my understanding, cover this very well in our group. We spent more time on other things. And before I go back to my community, I feel like I need to be armed with some kind of answers to how difficult it is to count up votes in STV. Like, I want to have a little bit of discussion on this, what other groups came up with, so I know what to. I have an understanding of what I might be able to say if somebody asks me about that.
Anyone want want to. There's some stuff in the handouts that that's the system they use in the Australian Capital Territory. Others use slightly different. Did you want to say something, Alan, in response?
Michelle, I'm going to a community 20 miles from you. And what I'm going to tell folks is that it's not your problem. I've never counted an election. I don't know how they count first past the post, to tell you the honest to God truth, whether they put them all in one pile and, you know, if everybody's in one pile and, you know, somebody else is in another and then count them up, or, I mean, how they do it. So basically the STV count is someone else's problem.
Okay. I think this has been a remarkable morning. We've moved through a whole range of things. I'm just going to, as I say, we'll write these up. We'll have them out to you in a few days so you can kind of review them and think about them. When we come back next weekend, we can look at the kind of the package as it looks like, as your version of what STV might look like in this province. And then, of course, we're going to go on to the next one. Okay. Amanda?
I just had a question going way back to the ballot form.
Yeah.
We went into detail about the ordering and all of that, but we never went into detail or voted on the idea of having a picture alongside the candidate and the party. And I'm wondering if that is something within our mandate or is it another issue?
We could probably express a preference as to what kind of signifier you'd want to put on a ballot. We clearly indicated that we want party labels of a kind because we wanted them grouped by party. There were a couple of people who spoke against that. Does anyone want to speak in favor of that sort of thing? That practice is typically more, I think, well, never mind. John and then Darlene. Oh, Darlene was first, John, then you.
In pictures, you have to be very careful as to what kind of a picture
could
you put on.
Could you speak in the mic, Darlene?
Okay. On pictures, you have to be very careful on what kind of a picture you put in there. If you're, say, if I was a candidate and I was at a forum where people are going to see me, in between that time and when the election actually happens, I better not change my hair from long to short or change my color, because now I'm not identified again.
John?
Yes, I was going to add, maybe to alleviate the potential complexity of that STV ballot, maybe there is some practical measures that could be introduced, like mailing the ballots to the voters ahead of time so they can do their homework, their research, and come to the booth and be fully prepared. So it would be an educational opportunity there.
We have Wendy, Alan, and Cherie.
Wendy.
I was going to go back to a different topic, and that was about the seat vacancy provision, the by-election versus the recounting ballots. I don't know if we want to go in there, but I was just going to suggest that if a seat goes vacant within 6 months of the election, maybe instead of calling a by-election, a recounting the ballots would make sense in a short time frame.
Alan and Cherie.
I just have a perverse question about STV. What happens if somebody doesn't vote one?
Then it's a spoiled ballot.
Is it spoiled?
You have to indicate one, two, three.
So one to N is
one
a requirement.
That's, yeah. It's like if you put an unacceptable mark on a current ballot. You know, there are certain things that count and certain things that don't. Cherie?
I just wanted to talk about the pictures on the ballot. I liked the idea, but I can see people picking, like, feel affinity to certain people because of the way they look, and maybe changing at the last moment their choice. So on that note, I would be against it.
Is there any enthusiasm for pictures on the ballot? I don't see very much. One or two hands. Okay.
Taya wants to say something.
This isn't a dead...
Just wanted to let you know I could pronounce your name correctly.
Thank you.
I always could.
I appreciate it. Just on the topic of pictures, I think in a way that it's a good idea, because when I look at my family, my yaya and papu can't, they follow things, they see pictures. So, like, they'll be listening to the radio, they'll listen to the news or whatnot, and they'll say, oh, You know, so a picture would actually help. I think it would help minorities who semi-follow and want to be involved, but maybe they just can't.
Okay, I think we have a pretty good sense of where people are at. Before we break, I thought it might be useful to remind us where we're going to be next week, because next week we get to do this in a way more fun way, because we get to deal with MMP or MM systems. I think it's there has already, I know some of you have seen on the members' website in the discussion pages, some really good discussion on a number of these issues started. Those people who've been involved, I'm sure, would love to have other people join them or to read it. If you don't have access to those kinds of things, we can find ways to provide paper copies of this too. But certainly, a lot of the issues are kind of being rehearsed there by the members who are chatting, and that kind of, I'm sure, helps inform the small group discussions. So let's remember what we have to do for a mixed design element. There's a range of choices that we're going to have to work our way through. The first is the principle, whether it's parallel or proportional or compensatory, that we want in a mixed system. The second is the balance between list and local seats, and that speaks directly to how much proportionality there might well be. Finally, thirdly, the question of whether candidates need to run on both lists, or can they only run on one, or can they run on either or. And those have really considerable implications for the relationship between the kinds of members that may exist, the amount of intra-party competition there is. After all, if you can't run on both, and say you're a list candidate, you know the only way you can get elected is if your own party's constituency members don't get elected. So you generate different kinds of pressures, where if you're both running on the same thing, then the dynamics are different. So there's a range of really interesting dynamics that are at work there in the choices, and different places have used different combinations. So think about that one. Then there's the whole question of what Louis Massicot calls the Italian trick, or the problem of who can have a party list, and do they have to have a party list with the same name as the label of their candidate, so that they can't transform the system into something that it's not meant to be. Then there's the question of whether voters should have two votes or one. And that has real implications, again, for the amount of split voting there's likely to be, the possibility of split voting, the possibilities of small parties to do well on the party side when they can't on the constituency side. So those are five critical dimensions that we're going to have to think about in designing an MM system. Next, we're going to have to then talk about the constituency seats, and that's ultimately probably going to be a question of whether we want a plurality or a majority principle. If it's a majority principle, do you want runoffs, or do you want just preferential balloting? Then there's the PR seats. And here we get into having to make a series of decisions on all the questions around a list. Do you want a regional list or a provincial list of candidates provided by the party for the list part of the system? Then the question is the level at which the seats are allocated on a national basis or on a regional basis. In terms of where proportionality kicks in, and then where the seats are assigned. You want to assign them from regional lists of candidates or from a national list. And there's various combinations. If you're doing some reading, the New Zealand model is allocate them on a national basis and assign them from a national list. The German model is allocate them from a national proportion, but then assign them to regional lists of candidates, so that ensures there'll be some candidates from the various regions. The Scottish or Welsh model is to say, no, proportionality ought to exist at the regional level, and then the seats ought to be assigned at. So there's a range of choices. Then there's the question of the ballot, whether these would be open or closed lists. And if they're open, what does that mean, and what would it look like? What would the counting rules be, and so on? Then there's the question of the formula that is for the allocation of the list seats. And there's a number of formulas, and Farrell has some discussion of that. They don't make huge differences, but they ultimately typically make differences to who gets the last seats, and some are a little bit more proportional, a little bit more advantageous to small parties. The question of thresholds, should there be thresholds? And if so, what kind should there be? And finally, if you want an MMP system that's in which there's a high degree of proportionality, what do you do about the so-called overhang problem? And finally, what are the vacancy provisions for both those kinds of seats? So I don't know if you can get all that decided in the first hour next weekend, but we'll spend a fair amount of time in discussion groups. I have a sense that the discussion groups yesterday helped us really kind of get our heads around the kinds of things we're talking about. So we'll spend a fair amount of time on Saturday kind of trying to work through these things and then come back and maybe try and do some of this again. Whether we can do all that in the weekend will be a challenge, but that's what we really want to try and move to. And of course, we'll start by supporting. Now, before we go, we're going to have our we're going to pass out very quickly a kind of session weekend evaluation forms. Joel is going to pass them out at the end of lines. They will take, as usual, 2 or 3 minutes, and there will be, I think, facilitators are going to be at the door, so you can just hand them to them as you walk out the door. Before we go, are there any other kinds of general questions, Harley?
I'm just looking at the schedule for the next week. I think we have to do MMP on Saturday. Sunday has to be reserved for comparing the two systems.
Well, we may have to do that on the beginning of the fourth weekend. It's going to be tight. You're right. We're down to the hard work. But it's the fun part, right?
Mm-hmm. I thought the next week was dedicated to comparing the alternate system to SMP.
Well, we've got to do those things. We've got to get the MMP system designed. We have to then compare it to this system that we've just worked on. And then the one of those we like best has to be compared to the current system. We have to try and have that done by the end of the fourth weekend.